Hello, everyone. Welcome. I'm Carrie L., and this is Carrie L.'s HeartLink Show. And as I connect to as many hearts as possible, we are creating more freedom, light, and love, one interview at a time. My programs will bring you insights into the Great Awakening that is underway on planet Earth as we approach 2012. I'll be keeping you abreast of the latest tools available for anchoring a greater and healthier reality into your life. I'll be interviewing cutting-edge experts in the metaphysical, scientific, paranormal, and spiritual. Stay tuned for the next hour as I will speak with one of the most extraordinary people who has created the wonderful exopolitics, and which is groundbreaking in terms of extraterrestrial contact and the politics behind that. And that is Dr. Michael Sala. So I'm very excited about this show. And we will be taking your questions at the bottom of the hour. And so just give us the first half hour to warm up. And you certainly can email me questions as well. And we will take the calls, and please be as brief as possible so we can get as many calls in. And the 800 numbers are right there on the internet. And just let me introduce myself a little bit. I am a therapist as well as a teacher of the information that is, I think, very important during these times, the mystery school information, and especially about the Kundalini. And please go to my website, www.heartlinkinstitute.com, if you want to check out my classes and workshops, as well as we have a whole lot of information online. You can read through the articles. And I also have the crop circle cards available to purchase, and it is a wonderful oracle that helps you to connect to your higher self using the wonderful pictures, the glyphs from the crop circles. And now I'd like you to just take a deep breath and relax, allowing good things to enter your life. And I'm going to give the blessing of the day, which is the Gayatri Prayer. Let us focus on that effulgent light from which the whole universe is projected. May this inner sun enlighten our minds and hearts, and may we awaken as that light. And now, without further ado, let me introduce my guest and welcome Dr. Michael Sala, who is a pioneer in the development of exopolitics, which is a study of the main actors, institutions, and political processes associated with extraterrestrial life. And we'll be discussing his wonderful book, Exopolitics, Political Implications of the Extraterrestrial Presence. And Dr. Sala is an internationally recognized scholar in international politics, conflict resolution, U.S. foreign policy, and has a Ph.D. in government from the University of Queensland, Australia, and a MA in philosophy from the University of Melbourne, Australia. And he's conducted research and fieldwork in the ethnic conflicts in the East, or East Timor, Kosovo, Macedonia, and Sri Lanka, and organized peacemaking initiatives involving mid to high level participants from these conflicts. He's been on shows like Coast to Coast, and so he's very well known in the exopolitics research. And without further ado, welcome Dr. Michael Sala. How are you?
Aloha, Carrie. I'm very happy to be here, and I look forward to the show.
Well, and I know that you're in Hawaii. Boy, what's the weather like there?
Beautiful weather at the moment. We live 2,000 feet up Mauna Loa, which is the big shield volcano here, and it's a little cloudy, but it's always warm.
Well, wonderful. And this whole topic of exopolitics is really catching on in multiple ways. And I'm really struck by the fact that it is, as you call it, it's defined as the policy debate over the choices governments and populations need to make in formulating and implementing legislative and policy responses to the presence of extraterrestrials in human affairs. Would you care to expound upon exopolitics and what's that about?
Sure. The easiest way of understanding exopolitics is to...
And could you please speak up? I can barely hear you.
Okay. The easiest way of understanding exopolitics is to see it as really being the investigation, the analysis of the public policy implications of extraterrestrial life and UFOs. That there's a lot of physical evidence concerning UFOs, and that what we need to do is to look at what are the policy implications of all of this. So that's really what the field of exopolitics is all about. It's going beyond the question of, are UFOs real? Is extraterrestrial life visiting us? To asking questions such as, well, what is the government doing? Is the government releasing all the information? Have government policies been secretly implemented to deal with UFOs and extraterrestrial life? So those are all policy questions, and we need to start asking those, and those are the things that people are becoming more interested in.
Well, and yeah, after many years that I've been involved in ufology, it gets a little stale just categorizing UFOs, and really am much more interested in getting beyond that whole thing, and let's get down to the brass tacks of what's going on. And you describe two perspectives of extraterrestrial presence with strong evidence to support it. And I wonder if you could just share with us those two perspectives, which are the helpers and the intruders.
What I think is important is that when we look at the whole field of exopolitics or all of the evidence, it's like there are so many different sources, and what we need to do is categorize them. And what I did in the book was to categorize seven different sources of information. And two of the sources that I thought were strongest in terms of understanding the policy implications of extraterrestrial life are the contactee or the so-called experiencer report, and also the whistleblower report. And I think that the helper perspective, the idea that some extraterrestrials are here to help us.
Can I interrupt just a moment, Michael? Because I don't know if you're getting a feedback at all, but I am. I'm hearing voices besides your voice on the line. Seth, could you fix that? I don't know if there's something going on there. Hello, Seth? All right, well, we're back. Just a little technical difficulty there for a moment. Go ahead, Michael. You were saying about the helpers.
Well, that's correct, yes. So there's a category of extraterrestrials who I believe are helping humanity deal with many problems that it has at a global level, financial, technological. One of the things that keeps on repeating itself in the many experiencer accounts of extraterrestrials interacting with people is that the extraterrestrials are very concerned about the policies concerning nuclear weapons, and also concerned about the way in which we are mismanaging the resources on the planet and the possibility that this is going to lead to some environmental catastrophe in the future. And so they're really being emphasizing to the many individuals that they have interacted with the importance of dealing constructively with the environment and trying to put pressure on the government to not pursue these nuclear weapon proliferation policies.
Well, and there's so many people who have spoken to this, and of course Dr. Stephen Greer was just on my show the last time and was sharing how important it is to consider the alternative energy sources that we could have if we only opened up to the extraterrestrial technologies that are being apparently hidden from us, because they would allow for a sustainable future. Otherwise, it doesn't look so good with the fossil fuel source. So definitely there is a push by from what you're saying and by many that there we need to disclose the information so that we can have a sustainable future, and also that we can empower people through having more free energy having free energy for the people, and then having food source plentiful for the people. And right now, instead of having a planet that is so lopsided in terms of who gets to have and who does not have, it really is not working, and the extraterrestrials would help us to be empowered and to be able to put in perspective what's really going on, apparently. And you speak to more information about what's going on, but please do give us the other perspective, the intruder perspective.
Okay, the other perspective that I have in the book, you're talking about the watcher perspective, those extraterrestrials that are basically not intervening but are trying to guide us.
No, I wasn't speaking. I want to stay away from that because I really do want to focus on abductee information, contactee information. The weaker evidence is just not something that we should bother with today. So if we could just talk about when you say there have been contactees, abductees, there are different versions of that. There's the positive experience and the negative experience. Would you share with us, you speak at the end of your book, the perspective that there is this element in our, that's hidden, the so-called shadow government, that is able to abduct our citizens and provide some very harmful experiences to these people.
Yes, okay.
Using ARVs, alien reproductive vehicles.
Yes, sorry, I just missed that word. So with the intruder perspective, yes. There is that other view concerning extraterrestrials, that is that they are coming here and performing these many invasive procedures and methods when they interact with people, and that is manifested best in the abduction phenomenon, where people are typically taken involuntarily and often are subjected to invasive medical procedures and genetic experimentation, and then they're returned to their homes or to the place where they were originally picked up with their memories removed, not always, but often with memories removed and even screen memories, and so the abductees have to go through a process of recovering their memories. And it seems that this phenomenon is not just something that occurs with extraterrestrials doing it on their own, but there appears to be a government element to this.
Well, it may not be extraterrestrials at all, is the point that you make at the end of your book. You say that it may very well be exactly that kind of storyline that is being hoisted upon us, propaganda that is to try to keep the shadow government in power.
There is that element there as well, the MyLabs, the military abductions, that there is a kind of secret government or shadow government role here, that there are covert teams that interacting with those having these experiences. So I think that there's a kind of overlay phenomenon happening here. That
well, it may not be an overlay, but it may be the actual what's going on. If we become sophisticated enough to make the determination as to, you know, it's interesting because John Mack, Dr. Mack, speaks of the abduction or contactee experience as being a good experience for people, and they are transformed from those experiences. And then there are the MyLab military abduction, extraterrestrial, you know, staged abductions that are these very bad experiences. And just want to give our audience that perspective and start our show that way, because I think when you go into the information about the way our currently that we are operating in this country, using that there has been an actual political coup that took place through the Eisenhower administration. If you could kind of now tell us about the background of how this came to be, how did this political coup occur?
Well, the important thing about the way in which the whole extraterrestrial phenomenon was handled was that initially the president played a direct role in appointing officials to take charge of this. We see President Truman passing a number of executive orders referring to the creation of committees and projects that would handle this issue. And we see also a similar sort of thing happening with Eisenhower, but that towards the end of Eisenhower's administration, Eisenhower felt that the whole thing had been taken out of control, out of his control. In other words, that presidential executive authority had been usurped, that no longer was the president playing a direct role in how the extraterrestrial issue was being managed. It was now in the hands of these committees that had been appointed initially with presidential executive authority, but that had evolved to the point where now these committees took away the role that the president had formerly played. So it was almost like creating a Frankenstein, like the president's, both Truman and Eisenhower had issued executive orders to create this kind of Frankenstein, if you like, of the secret committees that would take charge of the UFO issue. But then once the Frankenstein monster had been created, it basically cut the presidential executive branch out of any real decision-making. And so you had that very significant speech at the end of President Eisenhower's term in 1961, where he talked about the military-industrial complex and the dangers it posed to the American democratic system.
Yes. And go ahead and describe the way that was created. Eisenhower wanted a study group and appointed several very powerful people. Rockefeller, I think, was one, and Kissinger was another.
That's
at some point, maybe that's later on, but they got involved. Corporate America, in other words, took over. So how did that happen?
Well, that's a very important point, because President Truman was pretty much a country boy, and he was someone that kind of maintained good relationships with his background or people that he had been associated with when he was just a... he was from Missouri, that's right, yes, from that environment. Whereas with Eisenhower, who was from Kansas, nevertheless, Eisenhower developed very strong relationships with the business community, and later on he, I believe, was completely co-opted by business interests. So when he became president and took control of this issue, he allowed the business community or those with strong links to the business community to dictate how this issue would be managed. And so what he did was he devolved a lot of authority to these kind of corporate military interests, that whole kind of military-industrial complex. That was something that Eisenhower had, I believe, very naively given great authority to. So it meant that the control of the ET issue began to move away from a strictly governmental military control to something that was much more corporatized. And I think that was done on the justification that this would enable secrecy to be better maintained, because anything that was done in any kind of governmental or military facility, in theory, could always be investigated by the U.S. Congress, but things that were done in corporations could not be investigated by the U.S. Congress. So the argument was that the more you corporatize the way in which this whole ET issue was managed, the easier it would be to maintain secrecy. And I believe that that was the big mistake Eisenhower made, and he realized that towards the very end, which is why he made those military-industrial complex comments.
And what happened then as a result of giving power over to corporate America in terms of they then became their agenda was not for the service to Americans, that's for sure. What was that about?
Well, the agenda of the corporations was for basically maximizing their own profits. These corporations had a lot of vested interests in the conventional energy sector, the oil industry, the gas industry, and so forth. And so they wanted to maintain those industries and not threaten them in any way by releasing technologies that could in any way threaten their monopolies. The same thing when it comes to the pharmaceutical industry, not releasing any advanced healing modalities that would that emerged through what extraterrestrials were disclosing. And so you had these vested interests that were now dictating how the whole extraterrestrial phenomenon would be managed and all of the technologies would be released to the general public. And I think what happened was that you had a kind of multi-tiered system where you had some of these technologies being developed in deep black projects where you had anti-gravity fleets and other technologies being developed for the exclusive use of these very deep classified projects concerning extraterrestrials, whereas in the conventional sector you had very little of that happening other than in some other other than certain areas like the information area. So we had the microchip and integrated circuits and the computer technology being allowed to develop, but that in other areas you didn't have that kind of development occurring. So we had a kind of very stunted developmental process where in certain areas advanced technologies were allowed to be kind of filtered through. Philip Corso talked about this in his Day After Roswell book. Mm-hmm. So you had the microchip integrated circuits, fiber optics, you had night vision technologies being developed and a whole host of others that were allowed to be seeded into conventional industries. But these industries that were developing these very advanced technologies were allowed to develop very monopolies on these industries. So they made very large profits, and this was all being fed back into those industries that were in the loop as far as the whole ET projects. But the other areas were not.
Yeah, I was just going to say, certainly the Rockefeller oil energy monopoly was certainly one area that they protected for sure. And, of course, Nelson Rockefeller was in charge of the whole setup of the Majestic 12 group apparently, and he made sure that free energy was not going to get to the people of the world. And apparently, that is one of the biggest things, one of the biggest pushes that we really do need the most of, the free energy. So what they did apparently is made sure that the extraterrestrial information was biased towards a particular outcome for them. Is that right?
They definitely wanted to emphasize the national security aspects of the extraterrestrial presence.
Did they want to maybe create it?
Well,
is what many people are saying.
Whether it was to fabricate a negative aspect altogether, or whether it was just to give a greater nuance to the more negative aspect. I mean, Stephen Greer and I have a very different opinion on that. But nevertheless, we do agree that the government has, or the secret government has, nevertheless emphasized or spiffed up the whole kind of negative extraterrestrial phenomenon. Has kind of
what would be the purpose behind that besides, again, how does that place us in a good position? How do we get to a good position? You with exopolitics are aiming to get to a point where we can all come together and discuss whatever is really going on. Again, to assume that what's going on from a human-centered perspective, in other words, we tend to polarize and create conflict in the human world. Assuming that the extraterrestrial world is the same isn't that a little bit off the mark at this point? We have not a clue yet, especially if people are in the shadow government are feeding us a propaganda that creates a negative image and a negative language about extraterrestrials. And certainly we haven't had movies lately otherwise, except in painting them as bad.
Well, I would definitely agree that it's important that those researchers that are focusing on the government policy that has been created towards extraterrestrial life agree that there has been a lot of spin created to emphasize the kind of threat posed by extraterrestrials, and that has been done to maintain a kind of national security response to extraterrestrial life, and I think...
Well, it keeps them in power, that's for sure. It maintains their monopoly on the world. And, you know, if they keep us, the world in fear, and again using human psychology to do that. So how do we get out of that? What's exopolitics going to do for us?
Well, I think the thing is to get people to look at the policy implications of all of the evidence, that there's a lot of evidence out there, and there's a lot of spin as well, and there's some disinformation as well, and it's just like, well, how do we develop scholarly standards for understanding all of this evidence and try to kind of separate the genuine evidence from the disinformation, and what do we make of all of this? So, I mean, what we try to do in the exopolitical community is to say a lot of this evidence is worthy of serious academic study, and that once we begin to study it and then we can start formulating proposals or formulating policies for how the government should be responding to what is being suggested by the evidence. But at the moment, we aren't quite there yet. But there is nevertheless the framework for doing this. For example, the UN this year celebrates the 30th anniversary of the 1978 decision that had been taken by the General Assembly, that's decision number 33/426, that called for governments to coordinate themselves in terms of evaluating and analyzing their observations concerning UFOs and extraterrestrial life, and then have the UN Secretary General briefed on this. So we think that this would be a very positive thing to have the United Nations play a constructive role in putting together panels of scholars and committees to investigate all of this data, come up with some evaluations that could help guide humanity forward in terms of what are we to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and wouldn't one of the first moves be to stop firing at the extraterrestrials? Wouldn't that be helpful? In other words, much of what the cabal apparently is doing is weaponizing space right now, and is asking certainly that we believe more and more that we need to do that, just as they have done with the terrorist scenario.
Well, exactly, yes. I agree with that. I think that the whole idea of an external threat posed by extraterrestrials is completely fabricated, that there is no such threat, and that any efforts to develop a space weapons platform to shoot down extraterrestrial vehicles is really based on a lot of fabricated evidence concerning extraterrestrials being a physical threat in terms of an invasion. And so that's certainly a conclusion that I and many other researchers share, that there is no threat externally posed by extraterrestrials.
Yes. Alfred Weber does a great job on Exopolitics Radio in exposing that and what's happening with the weaponization of space. And certainly, you've done a great job in giving us all aspects in your book of what's going on, and really letting us know who is promoting which kind of agenda. And I loved that information. That was very powerful information. And as I say, you do identify Rockefeller and Kissinger and so forth. And the cabal, you speak to that, and of course, a number of ufologists, especially Richard Boylan, has spoken about the cabal and what they've been doing in terms of attacking the star visitors who have come to Earth and are living amongst us and who are trying to help us and empower us, and that there have been assassinations made on those beings. So that's... he'll be on my show very shortly as well. So,
yes, it's something I actually emphasized in a recent article that I did. That was published in the Exopolitics Journal, called "Galactic COINTELPRO." That since the 1950s, that there has been a counterintelligence operation that was implemented to disrupt and to neutralize the contactee movement. Beginning in the 50s, contactees were putting forward a lot of this information about the superior technologies and lifestyle and philosophy that the extraterrestrial visitors had to offer, but that the government of the day decided that this was just too much of a threat, that if the American public and the world public knew the truth about extraterrestrials, that all governmental authority would collapse, that people would...
Which might not be such a bad idea, given the kind of leadership we've been having lately.
That is something that frightened government severely, very greatly, the fact that a lot of the population might lose confidence in government to formulate policy in a wise way, and they've been struggling with this for 50, 60 years, which I think is...
Clearly, we haven't really had any leadership of sanity, of intellect. I love the statement. Dr. Greer said that the extraterrestrials were just waiting to have intelligent response back from us. So, and it hasn't been so far. That we've been quarantined because we are such a warring planet, and all warring planets around the universe are quarantined until they become peaceful. So how to get out of this predicament when we've got leaders that are keeping us and wanting us to be at war?
Well, it's not going to be easy, because what we are dealing with is a very sophisticated military intelligence, corporatized, transnational network of interests, which has been keeping this secret from the American public and the global public for over 60 years now.
And when it's not kept secret, it becomes propaganda against the extraterrestrials, painting them as the bad guy. So it's like, okay, a catch-22. They'll disclose it, you know, if they, as long as they make it their message rather than Now, the extraterrestrials, you said that when they first met with Eisenhower, it's interesting, they were open to a treaty with Eisenhower as long as we became a peaceful, nation and disarmed, especially the exotic weapons that we were using.
Well, it's very important when we're considering extraterrestrials is look at all of the evidence that's pointing to a number of meetings between extraterrestrials and government officials like President Eisenhower and actual agreements. That I think that there were meetings that were conducted with President Eisenhower, and that President Eisenhower was offered the opportunity of working with a more kind of benign, advanced, ethical group of extraterrestrials, if you like, that wanted to help humanity evolve, and that President Eisenhower, I believe, was overruled by his national security team and many of the people that that really did want to take control of this issue and put it in corporations and just kind of like enrich themselves in their corporations.
Mm-hmm. And I get the picture of his frustration, and that he wishes that he probably never listened to them to begin with.
I think Eisenhower was basically a good man that wanted to do the right thing, and he was overruled by people that wanted to take advantage of this or were frightened by the consequences of what would happen if the truth came out. And I think Eisenhower fought against that and lost.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very unfortunate because it meant that subsequently we had a government that became hostage to these transnational corporatized entities that evolved out of the national security or the presidential executive orders that Truman and Eisenhower initially had authorized.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, certainly there's certain families that you do mention in your book. You didn't mention the Rothschilds, but that's okay. I'm assuming that that they're somewhere involved in again the banking.
I can mention that briefly. I think it's important to understand that in the United States, what we have is an elite that is fairly new on the international scene. It was only after the Second World War or during the Second World War that America's superior technological infrastructure and vast population made it a global superpower. Before the Second World War, what you had was France, Britain, that were the dominant powers on the planet. And that after the Second World War, you had the United States. And so you had the United States emerging with its own elite, the Rockefellers and the Morgans and so forth, that had an appreciable say over the way in which these secret projects evolved. But in Europe, you had an elite that spanned back many, many centuries, involving groups like the Rothschilds and like the Illuminati, that had their own particular approach, and they much more nested in secret societies and kind of like a satanic influence, if you like. That had their own particular interests, and I think that they are a much more dangerous group because they're much older and they're kind of nested within these elite groups going back many centuries, like the Vatican and the Jesuits, and they have their own technologies, and so you have a kind of power struggle between the American kind of branch of the Illuminati and the elite interests with the European branch, which involves the Rothschilds. So that's a very, very brief response.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, apparently both have the agenda to keep from the public empowerment, for sure, free energy that would give us empowerment. And so basically, they're both kind of doing the same thing, just in a different manner, perhaps. But they are... So many have spoken to the issue about the cabal and the Illuminati and the shadow government that I won't, repeat that. It's all there, easily found on the Internet. Again, I want to focus on what's been going on in terms of the ET technology. And we can name some of the different things that have come from extraterrestrial technology. And how advanced we have become now when you look at our star weapons, Star Wars weapons, HARP and the EM scalar weapons that we have, that do you see if we're not going to get this situation under control at some very soon point, that we could have a World War III on our hands? Or even a galactic war, for that matter?
I think that there has been this very disturbing trend of these advanced technologies that have been developed with extraterrestrial artifacts or knowledge that has been recovered around the planet or stolen from extraterrestrials themselves, that there's this trend where the weaponry is becoming much more sophisticated, much more dangerous. And I think from the perspective of extraterrestrials that are viewing the evolution of life on the planet, they're probably looking at us and they're saying, well, will this planet decide to continue down this path of where there's an elite group of interests that monopolize advanced technologies and build very destructive weapon systems that can then be used to create a kind of imperial space power? Or will the people of Earth wake up to what's happening, band together, use their superior numbers and higher consciousness to bring sanity to the way in which the whole extraterrestrial issue is managed? And if so, then that means the Earth herself will evolve in a much more peaceful, harmonious way. And if not, then there are going to be destructive Earth changes, because the Earth herself, the planet, will not allow this kind of more destructive future to manifest.
I hope it's the latter, and that is the choice, right in a nutshell, isn't it? That pretty much, the grassroots movement is very powerful when we band together in a divine consciousness, and that really is, I think, our job right now.
And I think it's very important to emphasize that, Carrie, because I know you do that on your show, and I just want to really support what you're doing there, because when I look at the literature, I was just reading just yesterday the 1953 account of extraterrestrial contact by Orfeo Angelucci, and he was talking about the extraterrestrials warning him of an accident that would create World War III that would devastate the planet. Now, and there have been many other contactees talking about similar predictions of catastrophe on the planet, but it hasn't happened again and again and again. And I think the reason why is because there is this growing consciousness on the planet where collectively humanity is banding together, developing their heart consciousness, their heart links, greater empathy. And I think this is the great hope that extraterrestrials have for humanity, that this will continue to unfold and that these more dire future scenarios will not evolve or not manifest because people on the planet basically wisen up and they wake up and they develop those heart connections, because that really is what's going to save us. And it's not going to be technology or some superior understanding. It's going to be through this heart connection. And I'm very happy that you emphasize that in your show.
Yeah. That is essential right now in these times, as we are ascending in consciousness and people are waking up and we're getting all this information that's helping us, and we sift through it. And we had luckily some Congress people like Dennis Kucinich, who tried in 2001 to bring a bill that would halt all this crazy space weaponry, and it was called the Space Preservation Act. And so we do have some leaders somewhere there, but as I say, and so many of us are saying, it's going to have to happen, though, on a grassroots level at this point, because our leaders are just fast asleep. At this point, now again, that can shift, and again, we have the power to change that right there. And again, creating what's really important. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, what's the point if corporate America ends up draining the whole planet? How does that improve their stance? I mean, that's got to be They've got to figure that one out. And there is, interestingly enough, you talk about the extraterrestrial technology that's being found around the world. You want to tell us about the Stargate technology in Iraq, or, of course, in the...
I think it's very important when we look at geopolitical events that we don't just look at these through the lens of kind of conventional explanations that this is all about power and control of oil resources and kind of ethnic animosities, that there is also another layer here, a deeper layer, which concerns the existence of ancient sites with extraterrestrial artifacts and technologies that are being sought by those within the secret government who know that these are located in strategic places around the planet, that the planet itself has these ancient artifacts or sites in very sensitive areas, and southern Iraq was one of those areas. And I believe that this was one of the reasons, probably one of the most important reasons, for why the Bush administration was so desperate to get into Iraq, that it wasn't necessarily because of oil, because when you look at the what's happened in Iraq subsequently, there wasn't that much oil that was taken out to support American oil interests. Mm-hmm. That what really has
certainly
been,
hasn't changed the price of oil and our gas at our gas pumps. It's in fact worsened ever since. So
right, but it's not as though the oil reserves in Iraq have been exploited by American oil interests.
Yeah,
which is what
yeah.
people were saying that was why Bush administration went in. I mean,
yeah, well. A lot of people were, like William Henry, of course, many of us were very aware of the ET technologies, and he predicted that the war would be started to gain access to the Stargate technology. And so many were aware, but, we're just getting to a point where a lot of us are aware the critical mass. We only need 10 to 11% of the world's consciousness to shift what's going on right now. So,
well, that's right, and I think that is something that we can all put our energies into to kind of educate or enlighten and just share the information among that group of people that are open to this information and can work to come up with policies. Because mm-hmm. even if it is only just a small percentage of the overall population that is aware of these issues, nevertheless, that small percentage can come together and agree to policies or come up with initiatives to try to help others get a better understanding and to nudge the government along so that the government can come up with more sensible policies.
Well, we need somehow to have a checks and balances and not allow a monopoly of one group to decide for all of us. which way we're going to go. We've had civilizations. How many civilizations now on the planet have come and gone and, been destroyed in nuclear holocaust? Hopefully this time around we're going to get it so that our civilization makes it through. Again, we're in the adolescent stage according to the star visitors. We are learning how to not go into separation and making us against them kind of scenarios, and to create again the sense that there's the divine source in everyone, and to connect on that level instead of making someone wrong because they don't look like us or don't smell like us. So we have a lot to work on, but I'm hopeful. And of course, William Henry predicted that the Iraq, their national museum, would be robbed. So we were all just waiting for that to happen, and sure enough, that did happen. So, but more and more people are aware. What I guess at this point, we know that war is for profit. And we know that has been the thrust for the last, 2,000 years, actually.
Well, can I just jump in there? Yeah, I think there's another element here that we need to consider is that this planet has been historically ruled by a set of elites that understand that the way you control a planet is to manipulate consciousness. If you can create war, survival, scarcity, you manipulate the consciousness of the people and you can kind of keep people down in a very limited kind of survival mentality. The whole kind of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if you keep people down in the kind of survival needs, then they're not going to put energy into higher needs such as self-actualization. And I think this is part of the reason why we've had so many kind of wars that have been contrived. Part of the reason is to kind of promote kind of geopolitical interests and maximize profits of companies and elites. But I think that there's a deeper reason here, and that is to kind of like manipulate consciousness and keep up in this survival mentality.
Yes.
Because
I absolutely agree. Yeah, keeping people desperate is certainly the way they've controlled the world.
Right. And I think we're seeing that now. We are at one of those unique positions, in one of those unique points in human history where we now have the opportunity to evolve in terms of consciousness to make a quantum leap. I mean, people talk about ascension, 2012, and I think all that represents is a kind of quantum leap in consciousness. And we have the ability to do that now, and the historic controllers that have been managing policy secretly for thousands of years through different elites, they are trying to manufacture these wars. And I think Iraq was one of those wars that was manufactured. And I think this effort to get the U.S. to go to war against Iran is another case of where you would have a manufactured war to kind of like bring the planetary consciousness down. And I think I'm very hopeful that we are not going to have a war against Iran, simply because so many people within the U.S. military have taken to heart the U.S. Constitution and the need to protect that, and not
yes.
just blindly become the servants of a kind of transnational global cartel of interests mm-hmm. and create.
Well, it's not the military I'm worried about; it's the paramilitary, quite frankly. But you make a very good point, and I think there are plenty of good people all around the world who are getting it and realize that we have to band together.
Yes, exactly. I think that there are a lot of good people within the system and also a lot of people outside, and we try to, as long as we try to kind of maintain a dialogue and see how we can cooperate together, we can make progress.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Again, it's the corporations that we really do have to focus on if we're going to change the politics of this world. And we have to address them. And again, corporate paramilitary groups as well. So, well, thank you. I knew it would be an interesting and fast hour with you, Dr. Sala, and it has been. To my listeners, you have been listening to Dr. Michael Sala of Exopolitics, and you are listening to the Carrie L's HeartLink show, and I'm Carrie L, and I'm so glad that we've had this opportunity. Is there anything, you have another minute or so to wrap up, anything you want to tell people? Let's give them your website.
Well, I would encourage people to take a look at the upcoming Earth Transformation Conference that I'm co-organizing here in Hawaii from May 16 to 18. We have a number of wonderful speakers that are going to deal with the topics of new science, consciousness, and contact. And the conference itself is called Earth Transformation. We're going to have David Wilcock, Michael Cremo, Mark Macy and Victoria Lindquist and a number of other very good speakers who are going to really bring together these diverging topics of new science, consciousness, and contact. And the website for that is just www.earthtransformation.com. And you can get more information about my latest articles and research. They're all for free. You can get them online at exopolitics.org. So thank you, Carrie, for having me on your show.
Well, and thank you, Michael, and keep up the good work. You really are a pioneer, and I really do appreciate what you're doing. And again, we do need to get some really good people in leadership positions around the world at this point. So thank you. And I just want to mention next time we'll have a wonderful guest. I'm going to have Lynn McTaggart. She's going to share with us the intention experiment. And maybe we'll do a little experiment and again, maybe help the exopolitics issue next time through our experiment. Again, thank you, Michael.
Aloha, Perry.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you. Goodbye, everyone. Have a wonderful evening. Bye-bye.